He gave them the name of the man in Mexico to whom he'd sold his own old 1949 Chevrolet and confessed that he had stolen a newer model in Iowa. He described persons he and his partner had met. A Mexican widow, rich and sexy. Otto, a German millionaire. A swish pair of Negro prizefighters driving a swish lavender Cadillac. The blind proprietor of a Florida rattlesnake farm. A dying old man and his grandson, and others. And when he had finished, he sat with folded arms and a pleased smile, as though waiting to be commended for the humor, the clarity, and the candor of his traveler's tale. But Nye, in pursuit of the narrative, raced his pen, and Church, lazily slamming a shut hand against an open palm, said nothing, until suddenly he said, "I guess you know why we're here." Hickok's mouth straightened. His posture, too. "I guess you realize we wouldn't have come all the way to Nevada just to chat with a couple of two-bit check chiselers." Nye had closed the notebook. He, too, stared at the prisoner and observed that a cluster of veins had appeared in his left temple. "Would we, Dick?" "What? Come this far to talk about a bunch of checks?" "I can't think of any other reason." Nye drew a dagger on the cover of his notebook. While doing so, he said, "Tell me, Dick, have you ever heard of the Clutter murder case?" Whereupon, he later wrote in a formal report of the interview, "Suspect underwent an intense, visible reaction. He turned gray. His eyes twitched." Hickok said, "Whoa now. Hold on here. I'm no goddamn killer." The question asked, Church reminded him, was whether you'd heard of the Clutter murders. "I may have read something," Hickok said. "A vicious crime. Vicious. Cowardly. And almost perfect," Nye said. "But you made two mistakes, Dick. One was you left a witness. A living witness who will testify in court, who will stand in the witness box and tell a jury how Richard Hickok and Perry Smith bound and gagged and slaughtered four helpless people." Hickok's face reddened with returning color. "Living witness? There can't be. Because you thought you'd got rid of everyone. I said, whoa. There ain't anybody can connect me with any goddamn murder. Checks. A little petty thievery. But I'm no goddamn killer." "Then why," Nye asked hotly, "have you been lying to us?" "I've been telling you the goddamn truth. Now and then. Not always. For instance, what about Saturday afternoon, November 14th? You say you drove to Fort Scott." "Yes." "And when you got there, you went to the post office." "Yes." "To obtain the address of Perry Smith's sister." "That's right." Nye rose. He walked around to the rear of Hickok's chair, and placing his hands on the back of the chair, leaned down as though to whisper in the prisoner's ear. "Perry Smith has no sister living in Fort Scott," he said. "He never has had. And on Saturday afternoons, the Fort Scott post office happens to be closed." Then he said, "Think it over, Dick. That's all for now. We'll talk to you later." After Hickok's dismissal, Nye and Church crossed the corridor and, looking through the one-way observation window set in the door of the interrogation room, watched the questioning of Perry Smith, a scene visible, though not audible. Nye, who was seeing Smith for the first time, was fascinated by his feet. By the fact that his legs were so short that his feet, as small as a child's, couldn't quite make the floor. Smith's head, the stiff Indian hair, the Irish-Indian blending of dark skin and pert, impish features, reminded him of the suspect's pretty sister, the nice Mrs. Johnson. But this chunky, misshapen child man was not pretty. The pink end of his tongue darted forth, flickering like the tongue of a lizard. He was smoking a cigarette, and from the evenness of his exhalations, Nye deduced that he was still a virgin. That is, still uninformed about the real purpose of the interview.